Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and it's my pleasure to welcome all of you who are listening to Tuesday Topics, and to welcome everyone who is going to be a part of our discussion on Tuesday Topics this evening. I'd like to thank Rachel in Orlando for recording, Dave Williams for editing, and of course George Byes of Talking Communities for making this software available to ACB Radio. Tonight we are moving away from the topics that preoccupied us for the last few weeks and are going to talk about labor and trade unions. There are all over the world entities called trade unions, and trade unions are essentially aggregations of workers who agree to work together in order to make working conditions better, increase wages, and do a range of other things in order to improve the way that things are at the workplace. The question that we're going to look at tonight, insofar as we can, is how have trade unions in this country, and perhaps in others as well, worked either for or against people who are blind and visually impaired in terms of job placement and in terms of their preparedness to advocate for people who are blind or visually impaired who in fact are members of those unions. So that's our topic. And I guess the first question that I would ask people is for anyone who has had experience of being a part of a trade union to jump in and identify yourselves, because I think you're folks who might have the first kind of perspective that we'd want to hear.
Dave McElroy of Visalia, California. For a number of years, I was part of the SEIU, Service Employees International Union. We happen to be Local 535.
Thank you, Dave. I was actually a union steward in Trinidad for a teachers union, and I just was a little involved in an effort to start a trade union, that was successful starting a trade union in Daytona for employees who are of the Division of Blind Services, a government employees union.
This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. When I was working for the state of Michigan, the first time I was in the Michigan Employees Association, MSEA, or State Michigan State Employees Association, but then they opted to go with the rank and file, I guess, opted to go with the United Auto Workers. I don't know what that got to do with state employees, but that's what we were a member of at that time, you know.
Okay, so let's go around once with the people who've had experience with the trade union and ask what your experience was like. How did the trade union impact the job that you did? Did you perceive them as positive or negative? Could they have done more? Did they do too little? Tell us something about what kind of a report card you would give the trade union that you had experience with.
Dave McElroy, and I would have to say mine would be if I was grading, I'd say a C-. Part of the reason is, the reason is severalfold. One was because government unions really have little power. I mean, they really don't have a lot of clout when it comes right down to it, other than the numbers of people that participate with them. And so it doesn't really have a lot of, we really didn't have the right to strike or anything else. So our power was basically paper, if nothing else. And also, I felt that I was very, very, the treatment that I received in my discrimination issues, I thought was most underwhelming. But that could have been, and I really wasn't sure which, that could have been because I was blind or because I was not Hispanic. I would not be able to say which of the two, I wouldn't be prepared to say which of those two reasons were more germane, but I do believe that it was one of the two. But yes, I paid my dues. I was a fairly frequent meeting attender, but I felt that the basic job of the union was to collect union dues, and so not a real good feeling toward it.
Well, I felt that's the way my feelings were about the unions that I belonged to. I paid the dues and everything, but I don't know that they were really represented me well. Like, I had some problems with my employer at one point, and the MSCEA didn't really help me all that much. The Commission for the Blind helped me straighten out that.
Okay. Thanks very much. My experience with the unions was that they really didn't know how to deal with a person who was disabled, and they didn't do a good job of trying to learn. At least that was my experience in both of the cases where I was involved in working for or with unions. I didn't think either of them did a good job of accepting the idea that a person with a disability had any kind of opportunity to be fully represented. And in fact, what Gary says is I think pretty typical of what happens with trade unions. It seems to be their view that we have the divisions of blind services to protect our interests, and therefore we don't need trade unions. And trade unions essentially then argue that they don't need to take any notice of us, whether we're members or not.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that, because, well, first I'll say, in my profession as a medical transcriptionist, we have no unions. You either work for a hospital, and they typically don't like unions, they don't let them in, or you work for a transcription service, or you work independently for yourself. So I have had no experience myself with any type of trade union. But my husband, Bo, he works for Disney, and he's in food service, and so, of course, they have a rather large union. And I've always grumbled that he's been passed over for promotion that he should have gotten, and I don't think the union has helped out. And I asked him about it, and he said that, in his opinion, the unions aren't very helpful to persons with disabilities, blind people in particular, because they have no knowledge and aren't particularly interested in gaining any knowledge.
The very definition of a union is solidarity. It means you are not an individual. You are not you are part of a group. You are not an individual. Again, you are part of a group. That group happens to be, in this case, the people who work for the same organization. But you are nevertheless, you are a group. When they are bargaining, they're not bargaining with you in mind. They are bargaining with your group. Your group or your work group, your colleagues. And unfortunately, we as blind people have to be treated more individually in many respects. Our needs are not always going to be the needs of the group. Unions don't know how to deal with that. In fact, they're not meant to deal with that. They are meant to deal with the aggregate. And so there also then becomes the political aspect, where if you do not share the political ideology or even the racial ideology of the group, you are not to be included. So I think that happens, where we as blind and perhaps other disabilities as well are put aside because we are not we are not the same. We are not homogeneous. We're part of a different group, quote unquote.
This is going to change the flow of the discussion a bit, I think, but I can't speak from my own experience, but I can speak from the experience of a friend of mine who worked for one of our major federal government departments, and she's blind, and when she arrived on the first day, she was starting her traineeship with that department, her supervisor called her into his office and said, you're only here because I have to have you here, and I don't like having you here because you're blind, and while I'm in charge of this department, you will never be promoted, and basically nothing else good is going to happen. And I'm not exaggerating about that. He was as direct as that. And he was pretty true to his word, and she asked the union that she was a part of for assistance, and they were extremely helpful. In some ways, the blindness wasn't so much a factor because I guess it was just one of their workers being discriminated against, and they were able to do something about the supervisor. So I don't know how that helps at all, but it's a different perspective.
It sounds like things are backward where you are to the way they are where we are.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's good if they if the union helped them. But it seems like I agree with Dave that the unions kind of prevent you from wanting to stand tall and be an individual.
It's Debbie Hazelton. I've never belonged to a union, but a couple of places where I've worked have had unions, and I was never very impressed. Obviously, I mean, because I didn't join, they weren't really doing anything for me, but I often haven't liked their tactics. I remember one union that, when I worked for the county, they were always making calls to supervisors on behalf of this one woman who was constantly going and complaining about one thing or another, and they even tried to help make an ADA complaint out of something. And it was just always her way of being so controlling and looking for attention. I mean, everyone in that department is waiting for her to get out of there, resign, retire, or whatever. But I also know that at one point I worked as a disabled students coordinator way back in 79 at BCC. And I frequently got that sort of tone from different teachers of, well, that's what you're here for, you know, like we don't have to do anything for those students with disabilities because that's what you're here for. And I really felt in a way like it was almost a shame that there was such a role for people to think that they could put responsibility on and therefore get out of doing anything that they needed to do.
For those of you who actually had experience with trade unions, it seems that, if I heard Gary correctly, he didn't really make much of an effort to ask the unions to do much for him. And I guess I got the impression that that Dave, you apparently didn't either. And my question is, are we making an assumption about the union's attitude, or do we have concrete evidence that supports our notion that the union, in fact, is not helpful?
Quite on the contrary, Paul, I did. And basically, I was referred to the EEOC. The union really didn't take a serious interest in what I did. Now, one of the things that I probably did wrong in that was I felt that I could handle my own issues. What I wanted from the county and from the union and I got was a witness to the meeting that it was held between myself and a county employee. But basically, when the rubber met the road, the union walked away, and they said, well, you know, file your complaint with DFEH or EEOC, and they walked off. So that's what happened to me. As to the other issue, yes, I would have to have, and I think, too, now the surmising part of it, I do think that, I did, you know, there's some surmising going on, but in past action, but yeah, when I asked specifically for help, it was truly, other than the very most basic, not forthcoming.
No, I have to disagree with you, Paul. I did, when I was having problems with my supervisor, and I did try to go with the MSEA, but they weren't either able to help or they weren't willing to help me with that situation.
Thank you very much, you guys. So it would be the opinion of both of you that, in fact, you asked the union for help, and the union didn't provide it. Now, Dave, you indicate that they sent you to EEOC, that is, to file a complaint with your employer on the basis of discrimination. And I certainly understand that. But they provided you with no tangible support in the filing of that or offered to provide you with any protections within your job itself. Let's ask Nama if she would come in and perhaps give us some idea of whether trade unions play much of a role in Israel. I mean, we all in this country hear a lot about things like kibbutzim and kind of unusual methods of organizing in Israel. So, Nama, are there trade unions in Israel, and are they fairly powerful?
Well, unfortunately, the idea of kibbutzim is all but dead now. I don't think Israel is any better in this sense than the United States. I know people who tried to go to reunions and got absolutely nowhere.
It's sad to think that Israel is in the same rather disheartening position that we are. There have been a lot of experiences over the past several years of trade unions, in fact, not doing a good job of supporting people who are blind. Most recently, in the RSA case, though many of the people who were involved were members of the particular union, that union chose not to intervene and allowed some 60 people, half of whom were disabled, to simply lose their jobs in the regional offices of RSA. And that's one of the things that started me thinking about trade unions this evening, because it seems to me that there was an extremely obvious opportunity for a union to intervene. Virtually every rule in the book was being broken by the RSA administrators, and it appears, at least, that the union simply sat back and let it happen, which is a pretty scary thought.
This is Jeff from Brisbane, Australia. You seem to have partly explained it, but there also seems to be a bit of an assumption generally that everyone knows what all this is all about. As someone who doesn't, I was wondering if, Paul, you could just briefly summarize exactly what happened here. If there's more to say, it would kind of help those of us who don't really know the case to kind of understand the context that it's in.
Yep. Good point, Jeff. In approximately April of this year, the Bush administration, through the Department of Labor and through the Rehabilitative Services Administration, announced a substantially altered approach to rehabilitation, which came to be known as WIA Plus. And under WIA Plus, what they proposed to do was to consolidate and block grant a whole range of programs, which would have had the net impact of almost assuredly making certain that vocational rehabilitation for people with disabilities would be a service that would be honored in the breach rather than getting any specific funding as it has for many years. Beyond that, they decided that they were going to consolidate what they were doing by closing all the regional offices which had responsibility for monitoring the various state programs and which also performed some other responsibilities. In their efforts to close the regional offices, there appears to be pretty strong evidence that they overrode the policies and procedures that ought to be there.
I get the impression from what was said at the ACB convention that there was some reaction, and I think even if I remember correctly, the joint march with the NFB was related to this, and correct me if I'm wrong on that. But basically I wanted to get a bit of a handle on how the disability community at large has reacted to this, because certainly we can't blame the unions for not getting involved if we ourselves didn't make a bit of a fuss.
I don't know that I agree with that, Jeff. It seems to me that it's a trade union's job. If you've paid your dues for years and years and years and years, and management decides that they are going to take actions which clearly contravene the federal contract, which clearly go against the procedures that are set out for handling the kind of closures that they were doing, it seems to me that the union has an obligation to intervene, whether the disability community intervenes or not. You know, for me, it's a much clearer issue of a need for union involvement than most cases are, because it's a clear abrogation of the right to due process of the workers who were in effect RIFT.
Yes, I would agree with you, and certainly in a perfect world that would be the case, but we all know that unfortunately we have to draw attention to these things. And it does sound like the unions were derelict in their duties to support these workers. But, as I say, in the world as it seems to be, there's obviously a need for the disability community to at least focus attention on this. And the impression I get generally from people is that there's less of a culture of advocacy in the unions over there than there is here. It's not that uncommon here for unions to come into bat for people, particularly, able-bodied people in various employment cases. But it sounds like from what people have been saying in tonight's Tuesday topics that that's not so much of a culture over there, which means that in some ways you'll have to pull a lot harder to get them to intervene anyway, by the sound of things.
I think we have a couple of things going again here. I think one of the things is that, and I hesitate to use this word, but discrimination against the disabled isn't, and fighting discrimination against the disabled isn't, for lack of a better word, sexy. It doesn't get play. If, trust me, I know this is some lies on my part, and I have to accept that. But if you had either racial or even gender minorities being unduly segregated in this particular layoff, I think the unions would be all over it. I truly do. And I think the problem is that we are, for the umpteenth time, marginalized, and that's too bad. I remember feeling very much, we had a situation that could have gotten out of hand at work, and I have to admit, I stayed very much aloof from one particular employee that we had, because she happened to be one who was very clear about any time anybody would say anything to her, any male would say anything to her, she was going to file a sexual discrimination suit. And, you know, my approach to her was to simply ignore the individual's existence and only speak to her when I absolutely had to, because she appeared to have some pull, and the union would have gone to bat for any number of reasons. How do we fight that? How do we fight against that?
Did the disabled people who were losing their jobs, did they appeal to the union for help?
Yes, I think they did, Shelley. There were certainly requests that were made as well by the disability community at large, most notably organizations like NCSAB and NFB, and probably to a lesser extent some members of ACP. We're certainly encouraging the union to become involved. And it's also worth reiterating, lest we get too parochial here, that only half of the workers who were losing their positions had any disability.
One thing that warms my heart to hear is that NFB and ACB worked together on this demonstration against the firings of the RSA personnel.
Yep, thanks, Gary. So trade unions, at least on the surface then, don't appear nowadays to have been very strong in helping blind people operate at the moment. There was a time in history over the last 10 to 15 years where unions were very active among certain blind people, and I wonder if anybody heard much about those. What I'm talking about are the efforts that unions made to get better wages within sheltered workshops, as they were called then, for the workers that were there, who felt that they were being woefully underpaid and woefully mistreated in terms of not getting opportunities for promotion or advancement and so on.
I don't know, Paul. Were the sheltered workshops by the blind, were they unionized?
One thing that might be of interest to some people is that we've actually had blind workers' unions here in Australia. I don't really know all that much about them, and I don't know whether they're particularly active now. I think one in Victoria still is. But yeah, we've had workers' unions of the blind, and I think in particularly back in the workshop days, they were quite active in trying to ensure at least some kinds of standards in those workshops.
The Victorian one was particularly active and particularly successful, actually.
And I think it still exists.
It does, but I don't think it's so active now.
It's interesting. Blind Workers Union. Man, in this country, think of the political, if all of us got together and really made noise, think of the political and the media frenzy that would create. Cool.
Hello, good morning. My name is Jaffa and I'm from Singapore. Okay, this discussion about trade unions and all that, let me just add a few pointers where I come from. Fortunately or unfortunately, we have a different kind of political, cultural situation whereby our trade unions are very tightly controlled by the government. And for us disabled people to have a voice, it's rather, you know, quite a non-existent issue, because our unions here are, you know, they are like expected to tour the governmental line. We don't have that much of a voice, you know, to talk about pay rise or working conditions or issues like that. You know, and we don't have the avenue whereby we can bring out our grievances at work, things like that. So in our case, trade union power, as it were, probably is never an existent issue.
Jaffa, thank you very much for your input. And I don't think Singapore is very different from a lot of countries who are still would still probably describe themselves as developing countries. You know, one of the issues is, should blind people or disabled people expect to be treated appropriately by trade unions, or is that rather too tall an order? Ought we to step back and essentially just simply let things happen and make a decision that perhaps blind people shouldn't expect trade unions to take their part?
Well, it's Debbie again. That's almost like saying that blind people should just take crumbs and just take whatever's handed to us and not make waves and be thankful even if we only get crumbs. I think that the unions should be encouraged more, and I mean, maybe there's some training there. Maybe there's some, you know, again, I mean, unions are about groups, you know, fighting for justice. And maybe it takes groups of people with disabilities or groups of people who are blind to impress upon unions. But I certainly don't think that unions doing nothing and blind people just sitting back and putting up with that is the answer.
This is Jeff, of course. My feeling on this is that if you're paying union membership fees, or dues, as Americans would call it, then you have a right to expect the same support and services from your union as any other member would. So yes, I think that they should, and I think you have a right to expect that. Now, I'm not saying that you should forget your other advocacy services. People like, presumably like the ACB presumably provide advocacy service. Certainly our Blind Citizens Australia does, and you may well get more action out of them if you're in a tight spot. But I think if you are a union member, you and that particular service could probably say to that particular union with some justification that they should muck in and help out. It's interesting here, we may well find out fairly soon how prepared the unions are in Australia are to back up the rights of any of their vision impaired workers, because at the moment our government, our conservative government, is looking to bring in legislation which would exempt businesses up to 100 employees from unfair dismissal laws. Now, this is proving quite divisive, and in some ways I wouldn't be surprised if the idea was changed or dropped before it got through Parliament, but it is something that they are quite keen to do, and it is possible that it will get through. And so we may well find people being shown the door, or at least putting a lot of pressure on for no good reason, and it will be interesting to see how the unions deal with that. They're already campaigning very hard against this, and they may well say, well, a blind person in this situation helps add grist to our mill, and we'll stand up behind them, whereas they might not get so involved in the previous cases. But either way, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
This is Shelley. I would certainly agree with that. If you're paying union dues, we are fortunate to have other avenues, and some employees and union members might not have anyone else to go to bat for them, and we do. But if you're a union member and you're paying union dues, you certainly should expect all the help that that union can possibly give you.
I would agree. Unfortunately, unions are part and parcel of political organizations, and part of the issue is, are you part of the political mass? And I know in my particular union, SEIU, it just so happened that I was not the majority in terms of my culture, as it were. And I do believe that it's not supposed to play a part, but I do believe it did and does. And while things like, while we should be able to expect the same, we don't get it. And I don't know that there's any recourse on that. I just did my own thing myself, is the way I handle it.
Well, it's an imperfect world, and I can accept that, but I think it is far more imperfect than it should be.
Okay, there are two things that I think goes very much against us in Singapore here, and maybe let me point it out so that let me point them out so that you guys can understand. The first is that unlike in America or perhaps Australia or perhaps England or some other countries, where your blind organisations are perhaps a little more proactive in helping people like us to have a voice, to have a say in things related to union, trade unions, in terms of getting more equal pay perhaps, or having a more equal voice. Our organization here, which is known as the Singapore Association of the Visually Handicapped, does not play an active role at all in supporting us. Once we are out in the working world, that's it. We are left very much on our own. And we have to very much fend for ourselves. We have to very much carry our own burdens as such. The other problem we have is that our unions are too affiliated to the government. Our union basically set up by the government. The leaders are government leaders. The policies that the unions adopt are government policies. And therefore, we do not have much of a say in wanting, sort of to bring out our grievances or whatever it is that we want to bring out. And I think therein lies the problem. If we do not have any organization that is going to be active in helping us out, or if we have trade unions that are so politically tied to the government, then I'm afraid there is a limit to which one can bring out our grievances. There's a limit to which we can say, hey, look, I am an individual, I've paid my membership, I have the right to, have my problems or needs seen to. So I think, that's where the political, cultural, environment of a society or a country comes in. We don't like to feed on crumbs as well. I personally don't like to feed off crumbs. But we are in a situation whereby unless we are able to, as a group, get together and say, hey, let us educate the people and say our needs are just as great as yours, if not equal, unless you are able to sit to come together and point that out, you know, in the most forceful but correct manner, then I guess our situation is going to continue to be like that.
We have this thing in America where, in some cases, joining a union is not voluntary. It's sort of a mandatory thing when you work for a company sometimes. I mean, that's the political thing about unions.
Let's suppose that you're a blind person who's been placed on a job where you would be entitled to be a member of the union. You were placed on that job by the equivalent of blind services or its equivalent, and by some kind of an agreement with management that made it economically feasible for them to continue to employ you while you were training, and also to assess how effective their training is. There are an awful lot of people, disabled people in particular, though, I think, who find it difficult to accept the idea that that the trade union may have negative notions. Here, management has simply made a decision to put an employee there. They haven't usually consulted with the union. They're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. And sometimes, I'm afraid to say, the blind folks who are in those positions aren't doing as good a job as some of the blind folks who are, in fact, not working in this establishment. And that, I think, creates another program. So part of what I'm asking us to consider is the service delivery model so different that, for the most part, trade unions are irrelevant to folks who are blind?
Well, probably, since we get help from the agencies for the blind, I guess probably I'd say maybe so. And then some people resent the fact that as a blind person we have double exemption, you know, for tax exemption because of our blindness and things.
We don't have as good an exemption as we used to have.
Trade unions also don't welcome blind people, let's say, because it's their view that the determinants that operate for the success of blind people can't be duplicated by other workers, and hence they would argue they aren't really in a position to help because they don't know what's wanted. One of the things the trade union said over the workshop issue was that there was an immense amount of resistance, particularly on the folks on the line who were actually producing higher quality materials and earning more money. There wasn't as much of an incentive for them to be a union, but there was still also the joys and so forth of that happening. So I guess if blind people are essentially promoted based on what the Division of Blind Services is prepared to stand and on negotiations with management, if blind people are supported in terms of their employment by equipment that's provided by the Division of Blind Services and isn't the responsibility of the employer or the employee, if the blind person in employment is in fact not dependent at all on the union, and for the most part not interested in some of the directions that are going on, does that affect the way that we see the role that trade unions play?
I'm not familiar, obviously, with the whole blind services situation in the United States, and one of these days when you've got a spare 3 days, you might want to try and explain it to me. I think, though, generally, even here where there's more of a culture of advocacy, I think we have to recognize that the issues, specific issues that face us as blind workers as opposed to just workers in general, may often be fairly specific to us, and so in some ways a union might not find us all that interesting. But I think we need to try and work on them getting interested, because what they are good at, particularly here, is advocating on behalf of their members. And that's a skill and a service that I think we should be able to call upon if we need it. So, yes, and particularly it seems in the States, the parameters and the frameworks that blind people tend to work within are quite different. But it's up to us to make sure the unions get educated on that. There's no reason why the unions can't advocate for blind people in the framework that blind people work within, but the unions need to see this as an issue that they need to take up, and they need to be able to learn about what's required. So I don't know quite how we facilitate this. Obviously, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And if they're not interested in learning about this, then I guess we're out on our own. But just because we're working under different, slightly different circumstances doesn't mean, in at least in an ideal world, that the unions couldn't advocate for us in that sphere.
To me, the question is very much in the definition of what a trade union really should be, because I would have thought that a trade union simply means that if you are a member of a group of workers with the same kind of rights, wanting the same kind of rights, wanting equal treatment by employers and such. If you are a member of that group, then surely whether you are disabled or not, as the case might be, I am sure that you should be entitled to the same, maybe privileges is the wrong word, but to the same, same privileges or the same things that the other co-members of the union expects, you see.
Let's suppose that that in the first place our blind employee is not meeting the same quota as other members of the union are, but is being kept on by the employer. Let us further presume that promotions within this particular company are made not in consultation with the union, but in consultation, say, with the Division of Blind Services or other outside agencies, so that there are large numbers of submerged people, perhaps, who would be able to be served better. So, again, my issue here is a blind person is essentially being treated entirely differently from other workers, sometimes absolutely in a contrary way to what unions have a right to expect. The blind person is not doing good work, but is still being retained and perhaps even promoted. Is that something that ought to make a union unhappy?
Yes, but I think it would be important for all concerned to know why the blind person was not doing. Is the blind person not doing good work, or is the blind person not able to meet the necessary quota, and for what reason? Because then you're going to get into an issue, well, if it's just impossible to meet the quota because of the sight factor, then that opens up a whole another can of worms.
I think in that situation, if you also presume that there are other non-disabled workers in the same workplace who are represented by the union, because if no one's represented by the union, then I guess they don't have any input, then I don't think the blind person who is being treated favourably can expect a lot of support. At best, if they are a union member as well, the unions should, not say they would, but they should say, well, we've got a conflict of interest here, we've got to keep ourselves out of it. Because on the one hand, we've got our blind member, and on the other side, we've got our other workers, and that represents a conflict, and we can't get involved, which might be a bit rough on everyone, but it's the right answer. But certainly, if I were a union representing these other workers, I would at least be questioning that. And I think it's a fair question. Depending on the union, though, they could be openly hostile towards this situation. And I don't think that that's fully outside the realms of understandability either, simply because someone seemed to be given favourable treatment. Now, whether they are, in fact, or not, is the question. And I think in some ways, having a group that is outside and that is representing workers is a good way of getting questions answered, at least in theory, because it stops being about individuals and starts being about points of principle. But that's That's my feeling on this hypothetical.
It's Debbie. I would think that if somebody wasn't able to do the work or wasn't doing the work for whatever reason, that the union probably would just be angry and probably wouldn't. I mean, I think even if it was that the person just was not able to do the work, I don't think that that would make a lot of union members any more accepting necessarily, because many times they are in the union because they're feeling unfairly treated, they're feeling overworked and underpaid or underappreciated, and just knowing that somebody's doing less work is enough to make a lot of people angry.
Let's look at one final issue tonight, and that is, it would appear as though there's general consensus here that trade unions do not do nearly as much as they could and perhaps should to help people who are blind. What can we as organizations do to try to make the whole trade union movement more open to and appropriate in not only protecting the rights of employees with disabilities, but also in assuring that blind people aren't barred from employment because of quotas?
Okay, let's be very frank about it. There are many among us, I mean, in the blind community who think that just because we are disabled, therefore we feel the need for special treatment. See, the very fact, the very second you start thinking that way, then I'm afraid people will, you know, sort of, okay, for the first few, you know, at first they may say, well, okay, you have my sympathies. I will do my best to give you the best. But very soon, you will find that when the time comes when you really have to compete with people who have sight, when you really have to compete with the outside world, when you have to really produce meaningful work, you will find that people will say, hey, you know, I have been supporting you. What are you doing? We have to change our attitude. We have to say to ourselves, look, I have to prove my a workman is worth his salt. That's what I believe. We live in a meritocratic society. If you are good, you deserve help. If you are no good, that's it. You know, we have to change our attitude in that way. We have to tell ourselves we have to compete. We have to be sure that whatever we do is of equal standard. Okay, if we cannot be better than our sighted counterparts, we have to be of equal standard and say, look, I am just as able to do a particular job as my sighted counterpart. And if we can prove that, I think it will go a long way. Maybe it might be slower in certain places, right? But I think it will go a very, very long way in proving to the society at large that, look, even though this person or this group of people are not as able as us in terms of physical or in physical terms, they are able to compete with us and give us the best that they can give. So long as we are able to have the attitudes in our minds, then perhaps I think optimistically speaking, sooner or later they might come to our side. And I think it is true for every culture, for every political situation. So the issue we need to address here is really as individuals and as a group, how we face up to society in our work, really.
It strikes me that both unions and blindness organisations, at least anyway here in Australia, are member-driven organisations. And I think that provides us with an opportunity to try and form some links between our two organisations. And certainly, Paul, you've had some experience in the union structure. So obviously there are some blind people, albeit perhaps few, getting into the union structure. And whether it's possible to bring about some change from the inside, I would suspect that that's probably the easiest way to make it happen. And it's a little difficult because if unions aren't so clued up on representing the needs and recognising the needs of blind people, then it might be difficult to get up that far in the structure to begin with.
It's Debbie. Jaffer, I'm thinking about what you said, blind people shouldn't expect special treatment. And I think that that's true, and yet I think in some ways we're talking about equal treatment. And, you know, I think there's a fine line here, but I know I was raised with the message that I would always have to work harder than everyone else to get anywhere. And I really think in some ways that's a setup for perfectionism and hypervigilance that that I'm paying for in my life now. And I don't know what the answer is, because I don't think it's one. I don't think settling for less than one's best is good, and I do think people should be encouraged to do their best. But I also think that sometimes, no matter how hard that best is and how much is accomplished, when there are sighted people that have their barriers up and are, I would say, blindness phobic or disability phobic. I mean, there are so many people out there who really see blindness as the worst disability. It doesn't matter how good the work is. And in some cases, I think in a lot of cases, it doesn't matter. If there's going to be discrimination or if there's going to be an unwillingness to help, or if there's going to be condescension or patronizing or whatever, in some cases, I don't know that how much that person works even makes that much difference.
Well, Debbie, I have to say that it does make a difference, even though I agree with you in the sense that yes, there is discrimination, and yes, there is blindophobia or whatever you want to call it. But in my profession, as an opera singer, which has nothing to do with any kind of union and stuff like that, it's all audition-based, and it's all supposedly based on your ability. This stuff exists even here. And I found that to get to where my sighted colleagues are, I did have to work harder, and I did have to do more in terms of PR and to convince people that, you know, I'm only blind and nothing else.
I think we do have to try harder, and I think that when I applied for the jobs, I felt that I tried to sell myself on the idea that, or sell others on the idea that I was as good as a sighted person at what I did, and I think I was with the dictaphone typist thing. There wasn't always stuff to dictate, so I didn't always get those. But then I had a good job as a civil service clerk typist, 04, I guess it was. And it was good benefits. But then when I changed jobs to just a general clerk in this tape library, I still got paid as well as the other civil service wages, but they didn't. Some of them resented the fact that I should only have been paid minimum wage. But I felt I did the best job I could do.
Let me begin by very quickly trying to answer Jaffa's question. I don't know, Jaffa, that we have the kind of close relationship that we'd like to have with trade unions. I think that most of us are convinced that it's in our best interest to get more involved with trade unions and to try to moderate the way they tend to treat employers with disabilities who find the way into their midst. And I guess that it's my belief that one of the things that we can legitimately do and should be doing is outreaching more to trade unions to tell our story. I think that often the only time we have anything to do with trade unions is when we have an employee who is, or a person, who is placed in an agency represented by a union and we simply didn't know it. This is a fascinating topic, at least it is to me. It's fascinating because it's so much about the interdependence of the way we do things and the difficulties, in my view anyway, about drawing pure and unequivocal moral answers to questions that on the surface actually seem pretty easy. And I hope one of the things that we've been able to demonstrate to folks tonight is, in fact, it's not. The trade union is supposed to protect its members, and if its members can get significantly more money than the single parent left behind, then frankly it's going to be the single parent left behind. So it seems to me anyway that that's not an effective way to run a railroad. I think the last thing that I would say before winding this program down is that if we're ever to begin to be recognized as truly equal workers, we have to find ways of infiltrating the union structure and persuading them that they truly do have obligations to actively provide support for us and can't just leave it to others, not if they're truly going to be a trade union. And I don't think that we as an organization of the blind can do any other than try to get into the midst of something that may be costing blind folks an awful lot of jobs. So I hope that the leaders in ACB are listening to this program and will think about getting involved in an area where we really haven't done nearly so much as I think we should have. Thank you very much for tuning into Tuesday Topics tonight. This is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and on behalf of Rachel, who's doing our recording, Dave Williams, who's doing our editing, and George Byes from Talking Communities, who made this software possible, I want to thank all of you for listening to Tuesday Topics. We would love it if you could actually join us on Tuesday Topics as one of the people engaged in discussing whatever exciting topic we end up choosing. We meet in the politics room at ourplace.acbradio.org at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Tuesday evening, or 1 Universal Time on Wednesdays. Please join us. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we're going to discuss a question that has been debated hotly by blind people often. And that subject is it better to have an intimate relationship with a sighted person if you're blind, or with a blind person if you're blind? Does it make a difference if you're a blind guy or if you're a blind girl? What do sighted people bring to relationships that blind people can't? And what do blind people bring to relationships that sighted people can't? These are the questions that we'll explore next week on Tuesday Topics. I hope you'll join us on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.